Okay. Today we've got a very special guest. We've got Frosty Woolrich. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. He wrote a book called America on the Brink, The Next Added 100 Million Americans. Now, as I mentioned earlier on the call and also in the two emails I sent out about this call, we've had some very interesting and somewhat controversial responses to this announcement of this webinar. But I wanted to bring Frosty on to kind of clear through the issues and get to the bottom of a few things. I've had people say that they hate the idea of having him on, and I heard people say that they love the idea. So I got to ask you, Frosty, right off the bat, and hopefully you don't take offense to this because I want to keep this very open and not non-biased, but a lot of people are saying that you're a eugenicist. Can you respond to that?
Oh, I certainly can. I go to church every Sunday. I believe in the same God that most of us believe in. I'm a very dedicated and a peaceful person. At no time, ever, once in my lifetime, have I ever supported abortion, and at no time have I ever spoken, supported, or given any credence to eugenics. That has been thrown at me from those who would just scream the word racism anytime they have no logical or rational argument. Back in the 16th century, those who would speak up and say anything different than church doctrine always were called heretics, and that shut them down. And today, the same thing is used, and the same word calling is used when there's no logical argument or a dialectic or debate or discussion, and those persons that want to shut down, the easiest thing they can do is call somebody eugenics advocate or a racist or a xenophobe. And so I want to set the record very clear that I have never supported any of that. And so hopefully that makes it very clear. I am somewhat dismayed that many people who read my work and read my books come up with all sorts of charges. My main goal here in the United States, in my time, much like you look back and through history, there some individuals have made their intentions, whether it's Martin Luther King or Thomas Jefferson or Susan B. Anthony or Eleanor Roosevelt, and that is their truth that they brought forward. And for me, as a world traveler, my goal and my intention is to move the United States toward a sustainable human population. And the nice thing about that is we are already there. The American female averages 2.03 children since 1970. That's been going on. So it's not us causing population overload in our country. It is mass immigration, both legal and illegal. And so it's my main concern and my main intention in this entire national debate is to reduce all immigration down to a sustainable 100,000 or less per year. And the reason for that number, 100,000, and I put it out in my book, is because that's how many people leave this country every year, egress the country, if you will, so that we have a net zero gain. At that point, when we reach population stability, gracefully and graciously and by choice, we will then move this society toward a sustainable future, not 10 years from now, not 30 years from now, but 100 years from now, and that our children will enjoy the legacy of the American dream and a sustainable civilization. And so that's my main goal. Hopefully that dissuades any people from calling me all sorts of names because they simply don't hold water.
Okay, well, you mentioned overpopulation. Now, is this particularly just applied to the United States, or how do you see the world view on that?
Yes, there's no question that the United States right now is in a hyperpopulation growth mode that within 26 years, if it continues on this path, it will add another 100 million people. The water shortages, the water scarcity, the energy crisis, quality of life, species extinction, air pollution consequences, destruction to our oceans, poisoning of the land and the water and the air by the chemicals that are being literally laced into and injected into the environment 24/7 will be exacerbated by that huge number of people. At the same time, around the world, and I have traveled around the world, six continents now, well over 100,000 miles from the Arctic to the South Pole, I've seen firsthand the crisis, the dilemma of hyperpopulation growth in China, India, Bangladesh, Mexico City, Sao Paulo in Brazil, of Rio de Janeiro, Lima, Peru, on the Yangtze River, on the Ganges, which I've sailed on both. So I'm very well aware. Most Americans just don't understand what these massive population loads are doing to not only the countries and the quality of life and the standard of living, but also to the environment. And so it's my goal to hopefully educate all Americans to what we face, because if we don't and we don't change course and we don't move toward a sustainable civilization, I can guarantee you this, nature will do it for us, and nature bats last. And so that in itself is really sobering. But it's my also very optimistic and plausible approach that we can change course, that we can make the changes now that will make the will change the future of this civilization and actually lead the rest of the world toward a sustainable future. If not, and I'm standing with some pretty big guns out there, whether it's Governor Lamb of Colorado, whether it's Dr. Albert Bartlett, Dr. Diana Hull, Dr. Joseph Tainter, why complex civilizations collapse. Certainly Richard Heinberg, Peak Everything, Facing a Century of Declines, or James Howard Kunstler, the author of The Long Emergency. All of these people are very much in accord. If you want to see a movie that will support everything I'm talking about, go to www.blindspotdoc.com, blindspotdoc.com. It's an hour-and-a-half movie. It's by Adolfo Doring and Amanda Zacchium. This movie corroborates everything that the top scientists in the world are talking about. It certainly corroborates everything in my book. We are in the clutches of a numbers game here, and either we go toward a sustainable population level through our own choices, or again, as I said, nature will definitely rain down on us the consequences, as it is already in places like China, India, Bangladesh, Mexico City, you name it. I've seen it firsthand, and that's what we're facing. And so that kind of hopefully gives you a clarification.
Okay, just want to make this statement at the outset of this phone conference, just again so people understand where we're at with this and whatnot. Everything that we bring onto the conference calls, we want to make sure that people do their due diligence and they do the research on the folks, they do the research on the issues. Taking one person's word for something does not always make it law, fact, or right.
Right.
The issues that we're going to be exposing today, while they sound similar to other things you've seen or read on the internet, we want to make sure that everyone just takes these things into their minds and say, okay, I want to do more information searching and find out what's the truth, how does this affect me? Go out there, do your research about the stuff we're talking about before you draw conclusions to it, as it's putting a label on it, whatever it might be. I'm not saying that we support it. I'm not saying that we're against it. I'm just saying do your research. That's a statement we put in our magazine right up front, you know, because there's a lot of things, even though we all know in most cases that the income tax is illegal, the courts don't always see that the same way. So regardless if we know that something is right, the law does not always agree with us, and that's where you need to be able to defend yourself in those kind of situations. Now, I want to ask you real quick, Frosty,
yes.
What would be the solutions to this overpopulation that you're talking about? This is facing us and also on a global level. What would you consider the solutions would be?
Oh, excellent question, and I cover that in the book, America on the Brink, the Next Added 100 Million Americans. In fact, the last three chapters deal with all the solutions that we can and implement and also find success with. First of all, the American civilization right now is a stable civilization. Birth control has been very successful in this country since 1970. The average woman in the United States has averaged 2.03 children since 1970. Had we not opened up the floodgates in 1965, we would not have added 100 million people to this country. That was happened in 40 years. And unfortunately, though, because of Teddy Kennedy and his liberal politics, we added that 100 million people to this country and really exceeded our carrying capacity way back in the 80s. We're really living on resource, energy, and water borrowed time, if you will. And so my main thrust as far as solving the population crisis here in America, which is not a population crisis, it's an importation of immigration crisis. We are immigrating 1.2 million to 1.5 million immigrants every year into this country, and have been since 1965, from a world population growth of 77 million per year. So no matter how many we immigrate into this country legally, we'll never solve the problems of the third world and the other world countries that are adding 77 million net gain per year. And so the key that I say into the book is this. We must have a 10-year moratorium on all immigration, both legal and illegal, because the illegal is coming in at about 1 million per year also. And so when you do that, you have literally a chance for us to regain our infrastructure, regain our culture, regain our language, and regain our cohesiveness as a people, as a civilization. And then the second part of that is that we then can help other people in their countries. And the key here is help all of these people, the 77 million that are at it. We can help them again with water purification. We can help them with food production. And finally, we need to help them with birth control because we use birth control and we use it extensively in this country. That's why we have only 2 children average per woman in this country since 1970. And so when we help them in their own countries, they can get a hold of their own populations, become sustainable within their own countries, and then viable. And that way they don't have to explode out of their country and use the United States essentially as an international Kleenex because we can't sustain it. Anybody in the audience, just ask yourself, do you think we can add another 100 million and then another 100 million on top of that and another 100 million on top of that, because that's what we're on course right now to do, and think that the water shortages in California will all of a sudden be water excesses? Do you think we'll have more energy? Do you think we'll have less gridlock? Do you think we'll have cleaner air if we add another 100 million people by 2035? Will we stop the species extinction that's now going on at a rate of 2,500 plants and animals are going extinct in the lower 48 states every decade now? Will that improve? And, of course, will all our rivers start running clean? In other words, the Mississippi River right now has a 10,000-square-mile dead zone at the mouth of the Mississippi there, and I've canoed the Mississippi River from the top in Lake Itasca. I've seen it. We use it as a giant garbage sewage pipe is all we do. We throw more junk and garbage and filth into the and chemicals, herbicides, insecticides, pesticides, you name it. And so that 10,000-square-mile zone out in the Gulf, no marine vertebrates can live in it because it's so chemicalized. Would that get better? And so now you start to tie this stuff together, and you understand on an intellectual level, on a rational level, that population is the root cause of all of our problems in this country, and that to add another 100 million people will not solve any of those root problems. It will make them worse. To give you an example, California is right now immigrating so many people so fast that it is growing by 1,700 people per day. It is adding 400 cars to their highways every day. And that adds up to 602,000 more people every year, and that adds 20 million people to California in the next 30 years or less. How many people think that California can sustain another 20 million people and still have any water when they've got water shortages right now? They've got massive gridlock in their cities. Their cities are so air polluted that everyone's breathing literally toxic air. They're now finding that the fetuses born in these major cities are having brain damage and IQs are being lowered because the child is breathing the air that the mother's breathing, etc. And so you have to understand that we are on a very slippery slope, a very sharp edge, if we continue these practices. And so, again, the key here is that we stabilize our population by halting mass immigration so that we can stabilize our civilization and become a sustainable civilization. And then that way we can help other countries and civilizations in their own countries and become the beacon, if you will, of intelligent population sustainability. And we're already there. It's simply a matter of enforcing our own immigration laws and lowering the immigration levels so that we can maintain as a civilization. Because if we don't, there's no way we're going to be able to maintain. Will we put into the same kinds of consequences as places like India and China and certainly Bangladesh? And for those of you out there that don't appreciate this, I wish I could take everyone to China or India or Bangladesh and see what they've done to themselves. Because once the numbers have manifested, there's no way to change them. Bangladesh, back when I was a college kid in the 60s, we always didn't eat Sunday lunch so we could give food to Bangladesh because they were starving. Well, Bangladesh now has, from the 90 million they used to have, there are 144 million people in a landmass the size of Iowa. Get your hands around that one, or minds around that. 144 million, almost half the U.S. population right now. We're at 306 million. It's stuffed into a landmass the size of Iowa, and they're now on course to double it to 290 million by 2050. Do you think there's any hope for a Bangladeshi to have a Bangladeshi dream or the American dream or any kind of a quality of life? And, of course, the answer is no. It gets worse by the minute. And so the United States really deserves to change its future for its children by literally maintaining an immigration policy that will give us a sustainable future. Hopefully that gives you an idea.
Well, that's definitely a lot to write down.
Yes, it is. Well, I'm glad you're taping it.
the couple questions I've had that I just kind of made some notes on here as we're going through it. So you're basically saying that the immigration is the issue, the immigration in the United States,
mm-hmm.
correct?
That's right.
If we stop or we limit our immigration to a certain number, then where are these people going to go?
Wouldn't that
become someone else's problem?
Are you recommending that? What I'm recommending is personal accountability and personal responsibility and personal country's responsibility. In other words, what that would finally do was that we would encourage and mandate that countries like Mexico finally start dealing with their own populations and their own cultures and their own mandates. So that if they're going to continue to grow, and Mexico's a perfect example. They grew from 50 million to 104 million in the last century, okay, in that century. They're now on course right now to add another 50 million people by 2050. Okay, that's just 41 years from now. They're going to jump from 104 million. They're already, I think, at 110 million, and they're expected to hit 153 million. So at some point, they already have to turn the water off from 9 o'clock in the nighttime till 6 o'clock in the morning in Mexico City with their sprawling 22 to 24 million residents. So how do you think they're going to solve that situation in 40 years by adding another 50 million people? Well, of course, they're not. They're going to make it so bad that their citizens are going to live in such degraded, consequential situations that it will be untenable. And the same thing for Zimbabwe. The same thing for, I mean, South America is expected to grow from 325 million to 650 million. You see, at some point, somebody's going to say, you know something? We need to look at the United States as the leader of the world that has maintained a stable population. They practice birth control, and that birth control has allowed them to have a sustainable civilization. All of a sudden, you connect the dots, you create the critical mass of educated people, and then you create tipping point. And so in the final analysis, each country in the final will have to maintain a population that lives within the sustainability and the carrying capacity of that nation, whether it gets down to water or food or resources. They will get to do it by themselves, or again, nature will do it for them. And I can tell you from my own experiences, right now nature is killing 18 million people a year starve to death or die of starvation-related diseases around the planet. Out of that, and you can check this at the World Health Organization, and I've seen it firsthand myself, 10 million children under 12 starve to death every year. That's in 2009. That's been going on for well over 15 to 20 years now. And so the question is, do we continue just popping babies because the Pope says so, or because religions say just keep adding human population, or do we decide to change paradigms to a sustainable future and a sustainable human population in a methodically gracious and graceful way and honor other societies with birth control so the women can take charge? Because we have in this country, and so that's the possibilities that we have. Because if we don't take those opportunities, nature's going to take them away from us and become very harsh with her solutions.
Now, if Are you suggesting also that we would implement some sort of, one child per family or whatever it is with China, those types of laws?
Nope, we don't have to do that. And the reason for that is this. China has a one child per family forced abortion, a type of a really draconian birth control situation because they are pushed to the wall. As a matter of fact, for those of you listening out there, there are 46 million abortions performed every year in the world. Every year, year in and year out, decade in, decade out, 46 million abortions. And the reason is 96% of those women choose the abortion route because they weren't given the opportunity for birth control. And so the key here is why would the Pope or the head of Islam and all the other religious religions keep saying we can't have birth control and we can't have abortion when the fact is that 46 million women choose abortion and it's a very painful choice? Wouldn't it be better to allow those women birth control so that they could manage to have the number of children they wanted and they could feed and that they could afford and that the earth itself could afford? And that way, you wouldn't have 46 million abortions every year. And so here in the United States, we're already there. We are having an average of 2 children per woman. We are a stable civilization, and therefore we don't need to go to those kind of draconian answers. We simply need to stop mass immigration into this country, which would then, I guess you could say, encourage or force other civilizations to finally come to terms with their population stability. Makes sense, doesn't it?
It's very interesting. I mean, I could see on one hand where listeners would be very appalled by some of that, and I can also see on one hand where some of that makes much sense. Has it been tried? And if it's so, has it succeeded? Do we have enough precedence for these, I'll call them theories for the time being, but these theories to actually take form and manifest that we're talking about right now?
Give me the appalling parts, because if there's an appalling part, I want to bring it down to an intellectual and rational discussion, not an emotional one, because if people run off into their emotions, then they're not thinking realistically or rationally, and I really hope to bring people to a rational, logical thinking process rather than an emotional one.
Okay.
What's appalling?
I'll name off a couple things that kind of caught my ear. One would be laying blame upon religious leaders, which maybe that's true, maybe that's not, but just bringing religion into usually topics like this stirs up a lot of muck and distaste for different things. That would be one. The other one would be just the fact that, like, in America, we really we take a pride in our freedom. So not having the same freedoms to say I'm a well-off person and I just really want to have 3 or 4 kids or maybe a dozen, not quite like Octomom or anything like that, but say I was able to support those folks, by me not being able to exercise my either personal or religious freedom to do what it is that I want, how does that affect other people, my neighbor, the guy in the next state over, 3 states away, their personal and religious freedoms as well? Because when you start limiting one of those things, that there's a creep that happens, and it starts to these type of legalities or even moral issues start to creep into other things. I mean, that's why Real ID, everyone says, well, do you have something to hide? If you want to get driver's licenses with facial recognition pieces and everything in it and chips, well, if you got nothing to hide, then what's the problem? A lot of people have that question. The problem is they're not going to stop with that. So if you give them an inch, they're going to take another inch, and then a foot, and then a yard, and then a mile. And by the time you realize it, you've woken up and you have no freedom left whatsoever. So that might be some of the appalling things that come to my mind immediately from some of the topics we're discussing.
Let me answer that first one then. First of all, I don't attack religion. I just simply bring to light or expose the inequities of some of these different kind of religions. The Pope. I've traveled everywhere in the third world where the Pope has said, go out there and have as many children as possible, no practicing of birth control, certainly no abortions, and the human misery level, it's called the human misery index level, is astounding. The Pope goes out there and just encourages mass births from women and civilizations that can't feed them, And he's one of the reasons why 18 million human beings starve to death every year, and I say 10 million children. Wouldn't it have more of a rational context where the church steps out of the first century and realizes in the 21st century you cannot continue the old precepts of go forth, multiply, and take dominion, because it's literally destroying the planet and destroying so many human beings. And so I'm not attacking any religion. I'm saying that religions need to come into a newer concept, a newer paradigm that fits the 21st century rather than the past centuries. And again, I still don't support abortion whatsoever, but obviously birth control is our only salvation. And then secondly, you say, well, how many kids are here in the United States? Well, that's the nice thing about the United States. Because the average female is having 2.03 children, that means that some people, millions, are not having any children whatsoever, so that those that want to have three or four or five or whatever, octomom, there's, I think it's the Lugers or the Cougars that are in Arkansas, have 18 kids. The Dugars, D-U-G-G-A-R-S. You can go to Dugars.com, and they've just had their 18th or 19th child. Well, they get to have that because there's enough American women that are having zero children to balance that out. So, again, what's appalling about that? That we have the choices that you can have as many children as you want, and yet the average is 2.03 in this country, so it all works out. But if we continue importing 2.5 million immigrants into this country every year, and then, of course, that additional 100 million doesn't stop there by 2035, because by 2050 we'll have 138 million, and then by 2060, of course, it'll go to well over 170 million. And again, as I said, a child born in 2009, if we continue on this pathway, will see the U.S. population double to 600 million. And folks, we're not going to have the natural gas to warm our houses. We won't have the water to not only water our citizens or our animals or our crops. We're going to be in such rationing situations. You see, I've already seen this in my travels throughout the world, and it's not a pretty picture. So we simply have to move toward a new understanding and simply move toward a paradigm shift towards sustainability instead of unsustainability and abundance rather than scarcity and starvation and consequences that we're facing right now in the 21st century.
So in a political environment, I mean, obviously there's a lot of benefits, I should say, that are given to people that have no means to take care of kids, but to just keep popping kids out. Are you thinking that we should reform that? And if so, how would that get reformed so that the folks that say, I'm not saying that everyone that's on welfare is a bad person, because some people just have bad things happen to them. But the folks that obviously are taking advantage of the system, are you recommending that there be a new course of action for those folks? And if so,
absolutely.
What would that be?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, what people don't understand in this country is that we're importing about 200,000 people from foreign countries that are literally uneducated. They don't speak the language and they have no skills. We're importing them. It's two Pasadena Rose Bowls. You know, a Pasadena Rose Bowl has 100,000 people in it. You all saw a Rose Bowl. This every year you watch the Rose Bowl. Well, we're importing two Rose Bowls filled up with immigrants every 30 days. We're doing that every month in and every month out. We've been doing that for the last four decades, and that's the prime driver of our population crisis. And, of course, all of that kind of culture that we're bringing into this country, unfortunately, comes from cultures of poverty and cultures of illiteracy. And so what we're doing is importing a completely new subclass of citizens into this country that have cultures of poverty. They have educational cultures of illiteracy, and they don't change. And you're seeing it right now in Detroit, Michigan. And I'm a Michigan State University graduate. I used to work in Detroit. There's a 76% dropout flunkout rate. In Chicago, 60%. In L.A., about 65 to 70%. In Atlanta, the same. In Miami, the same. In New York, the same. And you're seeing 13 to 100 different languages being spoken. So we're becoming a country of strangers. But what happens when these children flunk out at this rate, drop out, you're creating a whole new illiterate class. Well, what happens to these people. Essentially, the boys join gangs and the women get pregnant. And so we have this massive numbers of uneducated mothers, single mothers, birthing all of these children that then go on to welfare. And the costs right now to us, according to the Edwin Rubenstein report, are $346 billion per year. Get a hold of that. B as in boy, $1 billion per year, year in and year out. But we also, commensurate to that, have 32.2 million Americans subsisting on food stamps in 2009. In July of 2009, get your arms around that one, 32.2 million. That means that 32.2 million Americans cannot or do not have the ability to secure a job. And so what happens when that number grows and the number of uneducated, in fact, Brian Williams talked about it on a recent NBC broadcast, 1.2 million 18-year-olds hit the streets every year functionally illiterate. That's caused by immigration, both legal and illegal, because it's overloading the schools, number one, with language and linguistic chaos. And I'm a teacher, a math and science teacher since 1973 out of Denver, Colorado. I watched this thing happen. We've lowered our standards of education. We've lowered our expectations of our youth. We've lowered our moral and ethical foundation so much so that it's a zippity-doo-dah situation. And so what we do is we need to change that paradigm. We need to stop this massive giveaway, but the only way to do it is stop the massive importation of people so that we can get a hold of our own house and the people in our own house and actually bring some kind of a viable educational system and a single language viable educational system so that we can actually turn out educated contributing members to our society.
So now, myself included, but a lot of people believe that this is obviously an engineered thing. This is not just by happenstance or by chance that people are growing in number and whatever it might be. Even the environmental things that we hear about on a regular basis, whether they're fact or fiction, there's a lot of things out there that people think that there's an elite group of people that are trying to organize and actually facilitate a particular outcome, whether it be a one-world government or some other kind of outcome. If the problem is illegal immigration and the powers that be, the global elite or the American elite, are not going to listen to people, the general population, saying, look, we don't want to change, or we want to change this and stop bringing in all these illegal folks or whatever it might be, how do you think we're going to be able to change that that policy, and or who are these people that are controlling and pulling the strings, if you believe so?
Well, first of all, the American people are in 2008 were extraordinarily lazy. They were apathetic. They were lethargic. And much like they have been down through the last 50 years, only 50% of them vote in the local in national elections and about 10% vote in local elections. So that in itself shows that American voters and citizens really could care less about how their government operates, at least 50% of them at a national level, and certainly only 10% of them care at the local level. And those figures have stood up. I think there was a greater turnout this year because of, the Black Obama presidential candidacy and so forth. But in the final analysis, we had a choice. We had a chance. Tom Tancredo, the Republican congressman from Colorado, and a man I know personally and respect highly, along with Duncan Hunter out in California, the rep out there, both of them said, I will stop massive illegal immigration and of course legal immigration. I'll reduce those numbers. And we had a choice and we had a chance. But instead, the American people blindly followed the mainstream media. And if you want to and appreciate the fact that there are some higher elites up there, and there are elites that control the mainstream media, then that is why you essentially watched some of the best candidates completely come overrun by the media and hysteria and ads. I mean, the money for the ads was incredible. And so the best man didn't get into office, or not one that would serve America and America's interests, and that's being shown right now, because what Obama's doing, as a matter of fact, I think he is a 6-foot man that can't swim, that's jumped into a 12-foot swimming pool with no lifeguards. He's flailing, and we're going to flail, because if he – when he was a senator, he voted to not only give amnesty to 20 million unlawful immigrants, He also voted to double legal immigration from the current 1.2 to 1.5 million per year to well over 2.5 million per year. So he would deluge the country with even more numbers from around the world, again, that will not solve anything but exacerbate everything in our country. And the American people sat by and watched it. They've also watched it and sat by in their own states. They've watched immigration simply overrun their schools.
Their language is being changed. What is the end result here? I mean, this is obviously being an orchestrated thing all the way through Obama. I think we've kind of got that. As far as what is the ultimate result? I mean, is there some plan that's supposed to be taking place, someplace they want us to be at with this?
I think the ultimate plan is to degrade the middle class of America into more of the same conditions back before the Magna Carta, when you had the feudal system. In the feudal system, you had the kings and the princes and the top of the castle. And you had all the servants, I mean the serfs, at the bottom, you know, producing the food and simply being taxed and so forth. What you're going to see is a change demographically in this country. You're going to see the middle class is going to sink down into a lower class, a lower financial class, and you're going to see a very rich class. And so instead of the rich and the middle and the poor class of this country, you're going to see the rich, and then you're going to see a giant fattening, a pear shape, middle class that drags down to and has a lower standard of living, a lower wages, lower everything, as you're seeing right now because of what's going on. And this is being orchestrated. There's no question it's being orchestrated. It's being orchestrated by Nancy Pelosi, certainly by Harry Reid. The insourcing and the outsourcing and the offshoring of jobs are now coming into fruition. We have destroyed our manufacturing base. Everything that we buy today, you look on the bottom of it, whether it's from Bangladesh, it's from Mexico, it's from El Salvador, it's from China, it's from India. Nothing is made in this country, or very little is made in this country, so that we no longer have jobs for American citizens. I'm actually writing a story right now about a five-part series at newswithviews.com. It's about American blacks being decimated by mass immigration. Our black citizens in this country are getting eaten alive by both legal and illegal immigration, and it's wreaking havoc with American blacks, and that's the series I'm working on right now. But all of us are really a part and parcel of this thing, because middle American whites are taking the same drubbing, if you will, at the employment lines, because we've lost our manufacturing base in so many areas.
Now, I'm just going to let everybody know right now, we've got an absolute plethora of questions that have come in. We've got 70 questions right now in the chat box, and we haven't even gotten over to the phone lines, and we've got about 13 minutes left in the scheduling of the event, which, if you're okay with that, Frosty, we might run over just a little bit.
By all means, I would love to stay on for another hour.
Okay, we'll do as much as we can, but what I want to do is I want to go ahead and start answering some of these questions, because this is why a lot of folks definitely came on the call. And just to remind everyone, you can go to republicmagazine.com/webinar if you're listening to the live event. If you're listening to the recording, obviously the question submission is over with. But you can actually put your question in right there, and I'll try to get through as many of these as we can. So what I want to do is I'm going to start running through these things systematically, and if we can try to keep the answers as short and to the point as possible, I'm going to see how many of these we can actually get through today. The first one that pops right up on me here is the Awakened one in Atlanta says, should unnaturalized citizens, quote-unquote, illegal aliens, be deported? Should we only allow those to immigrate to the U.S. who bring value to the table like they do in Australia or New Zealand?
Yes. Attrition through enforcement of our laws, so they go back home on their own dime. They literally, if you enforce the laws, Arizona right now has lost a third of its immigrants simply because they're enforcing their laws. And yes, when we immigrate this 100,000 that I suggest henceforth, literally those who benefit our society, that can speak English, that have educations, that it will be a benefit of the country, that is what immigration is all about, to benefit the America that we all know and love.
Okay. Mark in Halstead is asking, what method is being used to calculate the loss of the 6,000 acres a day, and where are these losses taking place?
Oh, he must have read my book. That was by Mike Matz of the Denver Post. We're losing, I think it's 2.19 million acres per year in this country. The calculation is this. Every added person to this country uses 12.6 acres. It's called ecological footprint. Those 12.6 acres are destroyed for housing, for roads, for agriculture, for cities, for buildings, for housing tracts, and so forth. And so when you add that 3.4 million per year, times 12.6 acres. That's how that is calculated. I think it's about 6,000 acres every day or every it's huge. Every day I think it is, but it's 2.19 million. And if you say if you add 100 million people to this country in the next 26 years, and you do 12.6 times that 100 million, that's 1.26 billion more acres that are destroyed. That much habitat is destroyed. You're simply completely destroying the habitat for the animal life in this country and all other wilderness, and that continues to, if that continues to go, you're going to see more species extinction and cascade species extinction. So we're really multiplying ourselves out of our own house and home by this massive immigration loading.
Okay, Jay Bush in Greeley, Colorado is asking, does Frosty consider himself a libertarian, a liberal, or a Christian constitutional conservative? What do you consider yourself?
I voted for the Constitution Party the last election. I've actually been an independent conservative. I've mostly voted Republican over the years because I always thought that was the better choice. In a few cases, I've voted other, but I've really voted Constitution the last couple because I've been so disillusioned with both the Republican and the Democratic side that I've voted again for the Constitution Party.
Okay, Eric the Red in Virginia Beach is asking a question. Actually, it's two questions. Well, I'll just read the first one here. Can these wicked elite, with their population control, malicious intent, actually get away with intentional mass genocide?
No. I think that's an emotional response to the elite and so forth. Actually, none of us are going to get away with anything if we continue on our own chosen hyperpopulation growth load, and if we continue to add another 100 million in this country, nobody's going to get away. This is not about race, creed, or color. It's not about rich or poor. It's not about fat, skinny, or otherwise. It's not about educated or uneducated. We're all going to suffer under the horrific load of hyperpopulation growth if we continue on this path.
Okay. An unnamed individual is asking, I believe that the global government is setting up an event that will provide the media justification to declare martial law, default the Constitution, and create a totalitarian government. What are your views on this?
As long as we as American citizens stand up, speak out, and vote for those who stand for the Constitution, that's not going to happen.
Okay. RC in Temecula, California is asking, what are the effects of a state going bankrupt? A state cannot fail like a business, so what are some short- and long-term effects that the state of California can face with its large debt, overspending, and services?
California, in my book, is I call it the bow of the Titanic. It is in so much trouble. As I said, it's adding 1,700 people per day, 400 cars per day. It's losing 250,000 acres per year. It's adding 600,000 people, 602,000 per year. And 4 to 5 million illegal aliens are working under the table. They're literally costing California $10.3 billion per year, as they also send literally $80 billion a year gets thrown out of our country in sheer cash transfers. So California is definitely the bow of the Titanic, and they're going to collapse financially. They're also going to collapse environmentally, just simply because they don't have enough water to grow the crops. They don't have enough energy to power all of their infrastructure. You're going to see terrible things happen in California. You're going to see a lot of people leaving California simply because it's not sustainable.
Okay. Just looking through a couple things here. Now, you'd mentioned about the water shortages.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about when you think this might take place? What's this going to mean for people? That type of thing.
Yes, the water shortage is the fourth chapter in my book. You can talk about energy crisis, you can talk about gridlock, you can talk about air pollution, you can even, if you want to get into climate destabilization, you can talk about that. What our greatest threat is the fact that we do not have enough water to sustain our civilization. And And it's going to be even more magnified if we allow another 100 million people added, and then, of course, another 100 million people after that, and so forth. Lake Lanier, Georgia showed that 2 years ago. I remember Charles Gibson said, well, how much rain does Lake Lanier, Georgia need just to help Georgia get away from this great water crisis? They're down to the last 33 days to service 5 million people in the Atlanta area. And the reporter said, well, we need about 4 months of rain. You know, and Georgia right now is at 8.2 million. They're expected to grow to 16.4 million within the next 35 years or so. And so California in the same boat, water shortages there. Here in Colorado where I live, the same thing. Arizona is totally dependent on the Colorado River. And for those of you who don't know this, the Colorado River gets sucked so dry that it does not reach the Baja anymore. It doesn't reach the Pacific Ocean. And so can you imagine what's going to happen to us as we add all this population, 20 million to California, another 4 to 5 million to Arizona, another 5 to 6 million to Colorado, another 8 million to Georgia. All of us are going to become victims of this thing. You're going to see different migrations because people are going to migrate out of these states that have lost any sustainability, and you're going to see huge demographic change. I'm saying we don't have to do that. We simply shut down the immigration into this country. We will solve all of our problems, water included, by simply maintaining a stable population, which we've had since 1970.
Okay, Daniel Henry from Atlanta is asking, it seems like most illegal immigration descent is based upon the perception of their negative effects on the economy and employment, right or wrong. Now, however, Ron Paul has referred to illegal immigrants as the scapegoat for Washington's bad economic policies and implied that correcting those issues should be a more paramount concern. He's asking, Mr. Rule, just what would your response be to that assertion by Representative Paul?
Well, you know, I would have voted for Ron Paul had he made it to the final choices for president. And I respect the man highly. He's really been outstanding. The key is illegal immigration has been a great ominous consequence to this country. First of all, it's added 20 million people to this country and their children. Out of the next 100 million people added to this country, if we continue on this path, there will be 70 million third world immigrants will be part the dominant factor of the next 100 million. And so what has happened is the elites have been using these illegals to feather their own caps, if you will, to pad their own bank accounts and to create unbelievable wealth at the expense of the American taxpayer. And so they are the problem. And they're not a scapegoat. They simply are the problem. If they weren't here, and I wrote a column last year was said, what if 20 million illegal aliens vacated the United States of America? It would solve a plethora of our problems. I mean, it would solve our language crisis. It would solve cultural, ethnic tension. It would solve just hundreds, financial, communities, every kind of impasse that we're facing, infrastructure, debt problems, loss of money from the transfers, $80 billion being kicked out of our country every year. It would solve our job crisis, 15 million Americans out of work, our black teens that are out of work because they can't get a fast food job because the illegals have taken them. It goes into every arena, so it would be fantastic to get rid of, just let them attrition through enforcement, get all these illegals out of this country. It would be a fantastic result if we had 20 million less people in this country that don't belong here in the first place.
The Iraq attack is asking, I should say, come on, overpopulation is not the problem, overcrowding is the problem. The entire world's population can fit with room to spare in Texas. Your comments on this?
It has nothing to do with space. And that's the great, you know, I've heard that ridiculous argument hundreds of times. It's not about space. It's about carrying capacity. It's about the water within that limited amount of space. It is about overpopulation. I beg to differ. In fact, I don't beg to differ. I flat out differ. I've already seen what most Americans haven't seen. If Australia was such a great place with great carrying capacity, and I've traveled by cycle. I've cycled the entire perimeter of Australia, and it's about the same size as the United States in the lower 48. It's 96% desert. Therefore, it's struggling right now with just 21 million people because it doesn't have enough water. So I'm sorry, but overpopulation is the problem because it's about carrying capacity. It's about water. It's about resources. It's about maintaining the other wildlife and so forth in that limited amount of space we all share together. So that ridiculous statement that everybody can fit in Texas is one of the more absurd notions across the internet. It's just not possible.
Okay, Jason in Granville, Michigan says, where does Frosty come up with his numbers on sustainability, and why is it not possible for a free market and innovation to allow us to adapt to the increasing population?
Because a free market, no matter what, continues to use up land and resources that are non-renewable. I'm going to make this unequivocal for those of you who haven't heard it or read it. Read Richard Heinberg's book, Peak Everything, and also The Party's Over. You could also read any of Albert Bartlett's work. We are running on gasoline in this country. We already import 12 million barrels of oil every day out of the 20 million that we burn. We're already not sustainable from an energy standpoint, and that's what drives this civilization. At some point, there will no longer be this oil, the great slave of the 20th and 21st century, and it won't be cheap. And so no matter how much you expand or no matter how much you conserve, if you keep eating into the oil and you keep eating into the unrenewable resources, at some point you cannot duplicate it. And at no point can alternative energy as we know it, whether it's solar, whether it's wind, or whether it's wave, or whether it's nuclear, or whether it's a coal, can we duplicate the power of oil? We're going to have to come to terms with that within the next couple decades, because at some point, it's not going to be there for us.
Okay, Gary in Brooklyn saying, how do you define overpopulation, considering much of America is still unpopulated in rural land?
Again, the same answer. It's not about space. It's about carrying capacity. It's about the ability to have enough natural gas to warm your home during the winter months. It's about enough gasoline to feed the big tractors that grow all the food. It's about having enough water to irrigate all that food. It's also about the resources out there that you can utilize and not destroy, so that nature still has the opportunity and the ability to keep itself sustainable so that it can sustain the whole planet. I talk about destroying our oceans in my book. We're just taking out the phytoplankton, which creates 80% of the oxygen on this planet right now. We're acidifying the oceans at our great peril. We're collapsing the fisheries at an unbelievable rate. We're killing 100 million sharks every year in our oceans, which is destabilizing the ecosystems of the oceans. When you understand this stuff at a deeper level, you understand that the human population is living on a finite planet with finite resources and finite water, and you will come to stability at some point. Either we do it or nature will do it. And again, read my book or read any of the books I just recommended, and you will understand this like I do. And then if you travel across six continents like I have, you will see what I have seen, and you will understand it at a deeper level.
Okay. Just to reiterate a comment that we made earlier on, which I think is very, very important, because I've gotten a lot of comments come in here that say that some of Frosty's statistics are wrong and some of them are different than what he's saying. And I'm not saying that they are or they're not. What I want everyone to do is realize
that facts and figures, yeah.
Not everybody in this world can be an expert on everything.
Right.
And at some point, you need to put trust in someone else's word when you know that they're a credible resource. I'm not going to say that one person's credible over another, but you need to do your research to find out if what we're saying is absolutely correct, so you understand when you explain this to somebody else exactly where your figures are coming from. If you find or read something on the internet, don't always believe it. That goes in the case of some of Frosty's stuff. That goes in the case of anyone's stuff about New World Order. Do your research. That's all I'm going to say, just to make sure that people understand that. This is very important as far as education. I'm going to jump into a question from Gary in Brooklyn. He actually has two questions. I'll go through both of these. They're good ones. Do you consider birth control as chemical pills to suppress the natural life cycle, or do you consider it a form of education? And do you consider population itself the problem, or is it the way we're educated?
Oh, that's a great question. I've been an educator for 40 years at the college level, certainly at the high school level and the elementary level. First of all, birth control is obviously a way to bring about population choice on a personal level and as a civilization, on a civilization level. It truly is one of the best things that happened in the 20th century because it has allowed first world countries to maintain stable populations so that they could enjoy a decent standard of living, a quality of life. I mean, how many people out there across America would like to see the whole country turn into a giant Los Angeles? I mean, because if you keep going, we could have a billion, two, three, four, 5 billion people inhabit the United States of America, and you would have a giant Los Angeles with a commensurate air pollution, water crises, species. We wouldn't have any grizzly bears left, or a moose, or an eagle, or any of it, because they would all be simply thrown into extinction. So at some point, I don't care where your background is or form or whatever you're thinking, we have to come to a stable population. Either we do it or nature will do it. And so birth control is the most honoring way to do it. It's the graceful way to do it. There's certainly different ways of birth control. You can have the pill. You can have Norplant. You can have the IUD. You can have all sorts of ways, and that's the key. And it is obviously it's a little a bit outside of nature, but I guarantee you, if we don't do it, nature has her own birth control, and nature is the population Nazi of all time. As I said, nature will come with the four horsemen: starvation, disease, famine, and of course war. And so I choose the rational. Let's go toward reasonable birth control on a gracious level by personal choice. And then the second question was about, it just slipped my mind. What was that second question?
It was about the education. Let me see here.
Oh, education. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Education, we really need to, as a nation, again, fortify the basics of education: reading, writing, arithmetic. We need to move toward critical thinking. We need to have citizens coming out that are well educated in math and science and biology. We need to have all of our citizens pass the standards that move them into the society so that they become a contributing member of society, a responsible member to society, and a positive member of society, so that our civilization has the ability to be, a positive civilization, where every one of us who lives this 70 to 80 years on this planet has the opportunity to fulfill their goals, to fulfill their dreams, to fulfill their creativity. I always say, let yourself move into the quantum field of possibilities, or the quantum field of opportunities. In other words, God gave everybody an opportunity to choose a wonderful life, an exciting life, or whatever life it is. I don't care if it's you want to be a macrame specialist or, like me, a bicyclist that traveled around the world. I hope that each person in this country has that opportunity, and education, a foundation of education, and then critical thinking gives that person choice, and then really benefits our entire civilization. And I'm very much for that kind of an education, and we need to bring that to our children.
Rich in Walnut Bottom is asking you if you can comment on China lifting its one-child policy.
You know, China is wall-to-wall people. 99% of their rivers run in raw sewage. Their skies are blackened with air pollution. Their people are crushed. You can't go for a hunting trip because there's no land to hunt on. Their forests have been decimated. Their waters are so polluted. Their farmlands are so polluted. Actually, they're in so much trouble right now, even with one child per family mandated. They are still, it's called population momentum. They're growing by 8 million net gain per year. Think about it. We're just growing by 3 million to 3.5 million per year. They're growing by 8 million on top of the 1.3 billion that they have right now. Actually, India is growing by 12 million per year, and they're at 1.1 billion. And the net result of that is, even at one child per family, China expects to hit 1.5 billion within 41 years because of this population momentum, and India is expected to hit 1.55 billion, in other words, overtake China. The kind of misery that they live in is so, it's so insidious. There's no chance, you'll never hear of a China dream or an Indian dream. You hear about the American dream, but you will never hear about that because China is so wall-to-wall people that the quality of life and the standard of living is horrifically poor. In fact, the average wage over there runs from about 33 cents to a top of 85 cents an hour. Tell yourself, or ask yourself this, do you want to see that here in the United States? Because the more the population grows, the less the quality of life, the less the meaning of life, because you're so jammed in, you're nothing but you're part of a giant can of sardines, except they're human sardines. That means each human life, each American life has less value because there's so many more out there. And that's what China and India are about right now. And as I said earlier, Bangladesh is even worse than all of that. So there's no chance for China to stop that one world policy. If they do, or that one child policy, if they do, they're going to explode past 2 billion, and then they will just be a giant, they will be like a giant petri dish with nothing but squirming human beings trying to survive around one another. It's pretty horrible, I have to tell you.
Jason in Granville is asking a very interesting question. He says, the starvations have nothing to do with oppressive governments. The WHO is working with the UN backed by eugenicists who want to keep third world countries from developing. It's about control, not sustainability. Your thoughts?
I don't have much merit for the United Nations. I wish we would pull out of the United Nations. They don't do anything for the United States, and their policies are just using our money to carry on their own thing. I don't know about their eugenics policies, but again, I don't know about any eugenics policies that are going on in the world today, but I do know that Mother Nature is killing off 18 million human beings every year right now. And so I think Mother Nature trumps the UN and all of her policies or its policies, and we need to really have more attention paid to what Mother Nature is doing to the human race rather than what the UN is doing.
Eric the Red's asking a very interesting question. He says, shouldn't you guys be talking about mandatory vaccination, mass genocide, instead of this, which he's talking about overpopulation? Your comments on the vaccination genocide.
Well, you know, one of the things that I do have one chapter in the book about diseases, and those diseases are killing millions across the planet every year. On average, tuberculosis kills almost 2 million human beings every year. Of course, you have all the waterborne diseases are killing millions of people every year. You know, I don't know if most listeners understand this, but about 1 billion human beings on the planet can't enjoy a clean glass of drinking water every day. The average African mother has about 8 children, and 6 of them die from malnutrition, from starvation, and from waterborne diseases. And one of them, of course, is malaria, is one of the diseases that they die from. Wouldn't it be better to provide that African woman with birth control so she had 2 children to exactly feed and actually take care of, rather than 8 of them that have that 6 of them starve to death or die or so forth? You see, again, use your logic here and your rational thinking processes, and not go off on this eugenics thing and somebody's trying to kill off and so forth. Vaccinations are good for what they can help human beings to ward off polio or ward off the flu or ward off mumps or measles and so forth. But again, in the final analysis, it's personal hygiene, it's living conditions, it's collective hygiene of a society. Those are the keys to living a positive, disease-free life, and that's what we need to get down to. And as you see here in the United States, we're pretty much there. We have a pretty disease-free life over here, and it has to do with the fact that we have a viable civilization that we've maintained now for well over 200 years.
Yeah, just to make a quick comment on your vaccinations mm-hmm. response, you know, my personal belief is that the vaccinations are good when they're used for the right purposes and when they're not tampered with. The problem is these days they're fairly tampered with, and there's a lot of evidence for that there's a lot of things going into the vaccinations that are not meant to help us, but, you know, they're definitely going to hurt us if we're not careful.
That's true.
Moving on to Randy in Aurora has a good question too. How are we supposed to control our borders if the government doesn't believe that there's a problem?
Again, the fact is we have voted this government in, and time after time. We've voted Teddy Kennedy in for 40 years. We voted Mel Martinez in for all these years. We voted all of Boxer and Feinstein in California. We voted John McCain, who didn't do a darn thing after he signed the amnesty of 1986. What we need to do is have term limits to get rid of all these old fogies and get new, fresh blood that is actually thinking in 21st century terms, that deals with 21st century problems and come up with 21st century solutions. What we need is to have, we got to get rid of people like Nancy Pelosi, certainly Harry Reid, who are stuck in the 20th century, and start voting for citizens who are running for office that are going to change the way that the Congress operates. We have an opportunity in 2010 to do that. But if we keep voting in the same bunch of old fogies, you're going to get the same results, and our borders will never be protected, because our borders are our home, just like our house, and they need to be protected, and they have not been protected for well over 20 years now.
Now, just to clarify one of your statements in the previous question, you mentioned about the lady in Africa that maybe has six children and four of them
eight.
End up dying.
Eight is the average.
Eight, okay.
Yeah.
And say six of them end up dying, but you say that if you offer them or offer that person birth control as a means for controlling that, you're not saying that that birth control is a mandatory use situation,
no.
But it's more of a
choice.
They get to choose if they want
right,
to use
the choice.
It or not. But just having it be available to them is what you're suggesting.
There you go. Always choice. And you will find that the more educated people are, they will choose to have manageable families that they can sustain, that they can love, that nourish. Very few women in a situation in Africa with eight kids can even feed those eight kids. Well, how many people here in the audience think that they've got a regular job making regular wages, think they can have eight kids and bring quality of life, quality of love, be to all the baseball games and help them with their homework? And I'm going to tell you, as a teacher, if I had eight kids, I would lose my mind. Well, most parents that have eight kids will lose their minds. You cannot be a loving parent that can really attend to eight children. So let's have more educated parents who have less children, so that the children that they do have are manageable, sustainable, and you can care for them and you can educate them by choice.
Okay. Absolutely. All right. Next question from Randy in Aurora. Do you suggest that we allow people in other countries to starve to death in order to get them to adopt our ideas and values?
Oh, absolutely not. What I share in my book is this. As long as we remain viable and we are sustainable, we can help other people in other countries with tractors, food production techniques, farming techniques, water purification, and as I said, birth control, so they can get a hold of their core problem. And it's just that simple. But if we are not viable and we are sustainable, let's just say we run another billion people into this country by the end of this century, which is what we're on course to do. And we're going to have so many problems in this country, we couldn't save or help anybody. We couldn't have Red Cross. We couldn't have humanitarian relief. We couldn't bring food to them. We couldn't bring anything to them. So the key is that we help other people in their own countries to bring about a viable and sustainable life for them and their own citizens in their own countries. That way, the human family will all be much better off from our help and our viability as a civilization.
Okay. As a quick reminder, we're going to open up the phone lines here in just a moment after I get through a few more questions here in our forms online. Just to let everybody know, if you wanted to raise your hand, press star 2. If you have a question, if you're on the actual physical call on the phone, you can actually do that star 2, and I'll select a few folks here in a little bit to unmute so you can ask questions. Please keep your questions to the point, and definitely keep them open. Just put it that way. If I hear any screaming or anything like that, I'll definitely mute you out and ever coming on one of our calls again. But I want you to keep very honest answers, to the point. Okay, 1 second. I'm going to have another question here. Gary in Brooklyn has got several questions for us today.
I'll write them down.
Why do you trust official World Health Organization statistics when it's known that government organizations and other powerful entities manipulate these numbers for their own agendas?
Well, let's answer that real quick. I have traveled all over the world to see firsthand the kind of diseases, the kind of death, the kind of malaise, the kind of squalor, the kind of human degradation on my own And so much of what the World Health Organization reports is right on the money. We are losing 18 million people every year to starvation and starvation-related diseases. We do lose almost 2 million to tuberculosis every year. And so those figures that the World Health Organization puts out really are quite well-researched, and they do show the human condition around the world, and I've seen it firsthand.
Okay, Kevin in Medford, Oregon, saying, it's absolutely not anyone's business to dictate how many children American married parents decide to have, and it's absolutely not the government's business to subsidize food stamp babies. No income taxes and no welfare. Any comments on that?
Yeah, well, as the first one has said, I totally agree. You have the wonderful opportunity for choice in this country. At the same time, because we are becoming so overloaded, there's 32.2 million Americans on food stamps. Wouldn't it be better if we stopped massive immigration into this country? As I said, two Pasadena Rose Bowls every 30 days are added to this country. All of those people in those two Pasadena Rose Bowl populations need housing, they need food, they need medical care, they need education for their children. Wouldn't it be better if we simply stopped that crazy kind of importation of people and simply took care of our own population? And definitely those who are not valid for food stamps, and certainly the anchor babies or the jackpot babies, that should be outlawed also, and make these people responsible personally, personal accountability and personal responsibility, and within the law.
Randy in Aurora is asking, if we follow your reasoning, then there are many countries that will go to war to get the resources they need rather than use the birth control. Why do you think this would not occur?
It may very well occur. Again, that's a very good question. It may very well occur because here in the 21st century, this is a fact. You can't run from it. You can't hide from it. I don't care if you get emotional about it, but we're running out of oil. The Hubbard curve shows that we will probably run out of all oil by 2040 to 2050, but it's going to get very scarce. It's going to cost a lot of money. And if we don't, if these countries are not living within the carrying capacity of their own nations, then you better believe they're going to go outside their nations, just like we are right now. We import, again, 60% of our oil. We import, I think, about 40% of our natural gas. We're importing 10, 15, 20% of our food right now. We're literally importing materials from other countries that we can't any longer harvest in our country. So you're going to definitely see conflict of other countries fighting for resources from other countries. So there is, again, it all boils down to overpopulation. If these countries would have maintained stable and sustainable populations, they wouldn't have this problem. But as you can see, the world's growing by 77 million more humans each year, on our way to go from the current 6.8 billion to 9.2, as high as 9.8 billion within the next 40 years. That's about 3 billion more humans. You better believe they're going to be competing for resources. It's going to get ugly, and one of the biggest is going to be water. Water is going to be the defining resource that people will fight over.
Rich in Walnut Bottom asks, he says that all these places fill up every day from babies, but ask him what the figure is for the deaths every day. It's more.
About 57 million deaths per year planet-wide. But even with the advent of 57 million deaths every year planet-wide, we still add another 57 million plus another 77 million. So net gain every year, it's 77 million. Some of the figures are around 80 million. But I always go on the conservative side, and the latest reports, and you can Google this, that the planet is growing by 77 million. Some stats show that it's growing by 80 million, but we're well on our way to hitting 9 billion just within the next 41 years.
So these statistics that you're getting, where exactly are these coming from?
Many different arenas. If you want to see what's happening with the U.S. population load, you can go to the Pew Report. You can go to the Fogel-Martin March 6th U.S. Population Projection Report. You can also go to the U.S. Census Bureau. If you want to go to the world population figures, then you can go to just Google it, world population figures. You can go to populationmedia.org, populationmedia, all one word, populationmedia.org. You can go, and that's by William Ryerson, one of the great demographers. You can go to worldpopulationbalance.org. with Paxson, David Paxson, P-A-X-S-O-N. And you can get the figures from there. There's also a UN population chart that also shows it. There are many different top. You can also go to the, I think it's called the World Clock, and it'll show you. It has a counter on it. In fact, I'm going to have a U.S. population counter and also a world population counter put on my website, again, frostywooldridge.com, just to give you an idea how fast we're growing. And so, yeah, you can verify those figures with all those organizations.
Arik in Denver's asking, what are your thoughts on Obama's health care plan and socialism?
Obama's health care plan is going to fail if it stays the way it is right now, because what's happening, and I live right here in Denver. I'm up in Genesee for the listener who just wrote in. What he's trying to do is create socialized medicine that will only fail. And it'll fail because you out of the next 100 million people, 70 million will be third world immigrants. There's no way that they can gear themselves up to be contributing financial workers that are taxed equitably to pay for all of the services that they use. And that's been proven by the Edwin Rubenstein report that we're now putting out $346 billion per year just to pay for all the legal and illegal immigrants in this country right now. They simply can't pay their way. They can't hold their own. They can't pay for these medical services. And so what's going to happen is that the medical systems in this country will collapse internally, and that medical care for all Americans will be so poor that literally millions will go without medical care. It's not tenable. And what Obama's doing is just smoke and mirrors. And that's why this thing must be defeated, because it's not going to be a viable universal health care package. It can't work.
Just to let you know, we went from 70 questions when I started the question thing to 121 now.
Holy
catfish.
There's
no possible way. There's a lot of people that have a lot of things to say and a lot of questions
sure.
to ask, but there's no way we're going to get to everybody. I've got one last question for the questions that come in through our streaming forum on the web, and I'm going to go over to the telephones. Phil in Florida says, actually Florida, D-U-H is how he spells that. It's kind of funny. What can you say? I'm there too.
I like humor.
What can you say about Codex Alimentarius?
What was that?
What can you say about Codex Alimentarius? Do you know much about that?
No, I don't know much about it. So if I don't know something about something, then I just cannot make a comment on it.
Okay. I would say, because I do know something about it, that that's something you should definitely take a look at, because it plays right into what we're talking about with starvation and mm-hmm. the minerals and vitamins. So
one of the things that I would bring, if what I think has to do with nutrition, one of the things that we're suffering, and I talk about it in this country in the farming chapter, is that we're so depleting our soils in this country that we no longer have the micronutrient value in our soils, and so much of what is happening is that we're coercing all of the crops in our country by using, natural gas and oil, fertilizers, phosphates, and what we're actually doing is growing what it could be called cotton candy. To give you an example, in 1949, one plate of spinach now takes over 70 plates of spinach, according to the USDA, because it can't pull the micronutrients out of the soil. And so one of the things that people just keep eating and overeating in this country but still have so many problems is because they're not enjoying the micronutrients that fulfill all the cellular tissue needs in the body. And right now we have, 180 million overweight or certainly obese, grossly obese Americans because they just simply keep eating, trying to gain the micronutrients into their bodies. Their bodies are craving the micronutrients, but they can't get them, so they keep eating more and more, but have less and less micronutrient value, and that's why you see such a terrible obesity in the United States of America right now, are one of the reasons, of course. There are many MSG, the aspartame poisoning, and so forth. Write me, and I'll simply share with you some of the information that I know on that.
Okay, great. We're going to go to the phone calls now. We've already gone way over. Hopefully, we're still okay on time, Frosty, for a few more.
I'm with you all the way.
Okay, great. We've got Hayward, California. It looks like it might be Deborah. Last phone, four numbers of the phone number is 0718. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you. Just one moment. Okay, Deborah, you're on?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Fantastic. I've been trying to get through. I don't know why the emphasis is on eugenics, because, I won't get into that. What I want to know is I live in California, and I I ride public transportation, and I visit stores, and I visit college campuses, and I'm viewing the immigration problem not only as third world immigrants, but as very highly educated Europeans that are coming over. And they've got these H-5 visas or something. And I'm wondering what your views are on, should we allow people who are highly skilled to come here? When I went to college, my friends went to college, we're trying to get jobs, we're trying to compete in the workplace to have a high-paying job, and these Europeans or other highly skilled people seem to be taking the jobs at Microsoft, at wherever. They're coming from overseas, immigrating, and they're sure they're giving value to our country, but we're losing out.
That's an outstanding question. I'm really for stopping all these H-2B and the H-2B visas, the L-1 visas, because what they are is undermining American IT workers. They're undermining American workers. What our immigration levels should be, and as I said, an optimum of 100,000 per year, but and only those who can benefit us, as long as it doesn't impinge on American workers. And so I've written about that with Dr. Nelson, that the H-1B and the H-2B visa scam and the L-1 scams, where the employers are hiring all of these foreign workers at half the wages, when American IT workers are out there, over a million of them have lost their jobs in the last about the half dozen years. And that is continuing, and so I would like to see the H-1B, the H-2B, and the L-1 visas curtailed or totally diminished, so that only a few can get through. Because good old American citizens, and certainly college graduates that have worked their tail feathers off in the tech fields, deserve to have these jobs, and we must protect our citizens way beyond any immigrants. And so I'm with the caller, and absolutely agree with her. We can't continue this kind of immigration to the detriment of our own citizens.
Great. Thanks so much, Deborah, for your call.
Thank you, Deborah.
You're
welcome. All right, we're going to Clearwater, Florida. Sorry we cut you off there, Deborah, slightly. Last four digits of the phone number is 0399. Just one second. I'm going to unmute you. Okay, go ahead.
Hey, greetings. I've got a question about what we're allowed to actually utilize of our technology and our resources. Okay, it seems to be in the control of the wrong hands. There are ways to get water out of the air and desalinization. There are ways to replenish the soil. There is industry that is intentionally poisoning the soil, okay? Industries are not accountable for their toxic pollution that lasts for thousands of years. I just, we blame a lot of things on the population expansion, but I think if everybody's standard of living was honestly brought up to a certain level, there would be no need for overpopulation. Can you address that?
Yes, and that's one of the things that we have found, is that the more educated civilizations are, the more natural they go down to lower population levels, and with that, that would be the optimum situation. Highly educated populations simply move toward more sustainable use of resources. They are more conscientious. They're more on the conservation minded, and that's the great power of education. The caveat to what we're facing right now is that the third world, which is highly uneducated, highly illiterate, is growing by 77 million people per year, so that they simply continue to overmultiply, overpopulate, and simply degrade the land, degrade the water, degrade the resources to an untenable situation, that it's not recoverable. And so that's why we simply have to either move toward securing our own civilization and helping them in their own countries as best we can, or in the final analysis, they are simply going to ravage the land and ravage themselves, and then, and as they continue to overpopulate, simply turn their civilizations into unsustainable civilizations, and of course the Four Horsemen will then affect all of them.
Well, I agree partially, but it boils down to, in my opinion, the power of the few having control over the power of the many. That's all.
Well, and that's a very good point, because there are always those who want the ultimate power of the finance and of their own self-interest, and they do have that in every society. There's always those who have the most power. I think it was Stalin who said, God is on the side of the biggest guns. Well, God is on the side of the biggest money, and you're going to have that in every society, because there are always those who have become the landed gentry or the aristocracy or the rich or the elite or so forth, and they will always put themselves at the highest level of finance and power and so forth. But in the final analysis, the overpopulation load simply degrades everything for everybody, and it's the one thing that needs to be addressed even more than all these highfalutin rich folks or the elites or whatever you want to call them. We're talking about quality of life for all of us on a sustainable planet.
So in regards to these technologies that the caller is discussing that we know are out there because they're being used, in development of these technologies to also stave off some of this hunger and some of the disease and whatnot, I mean, what would you recommend as far as what people can do to make these technologies become more accessible and or just people are aware of this in general?
Oh, a great question. I love technology. It's brought such extraordinary advancement for so many. But again, go read James Howard Kunstler's book, The Long Emergency, and I know the man personally. He's brilliant. Richard Heinberg's book, Peak Everything. At some point, you can have 10 more green revolutions, but you only have one planet. So there is a finite level in the final analysis, and there's a finite planet, so there must be a stable population. Either we do it or nature will do it. Technology can give us so much, but it's like, you know, let's conserve by having all these new curlicue light bulbs. So we buy a new curlicue light bulb, but there's 100 more people using the curlicue light bulb. That's still 100 more people. You can serve a gallon of water by not taking as long a shower, but if there's 1,000 more people, you've got use 999 more gallons of water. In the final analysis, you simply have to come to stability of population to live within the carrying capacity of a set amount of land, and no amount of technology is going to continue to allow us to expand beyond that carrying capacity, no matter how optimistic you are about technology.
Great. Well, thanks a lot, caller, for that question. We're going to go to our next question. Last four digits ending in 5009, Downey, California. One moment while I unmute you.
Can you hear?
Yes, ma'am. I can hear you clearly. Thank you.
Okay. This is Jo Marie Johnson. I just want to say this, Frosty. You are so right on about everything. I'm right behind you 100%. And
thank
I just
you.
Want to say, keep up the good work, because you're enlightening a lot of people. You're right. If we don't do something about our population, and I don't mean abortions or killing people, anything, birth control, nature will do it for us. That's right. Everything you say is right on, and that's all I want to say. So I just love this call. This is a very educational one. So thank you,
Jo Marie. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Marie.
You know, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm 62 years old. I've had an extraordinary life of travel. I've seen everything I talk about. I've researched everything. I hope that you understand that I come to you with integrity and also experience at a personal level, and that I make sense, that everything I have said in the last 2 hours here makes sense, that it's rational, it's logical, and as Jo Marie just said, you can see it. Just look around you. And so when you see it and you're logical and you're practical and you move beyond the emotions and you move beyond all the other things that are out there, what I'm talking about makes sense. My book, America on the Brink, The Next Out of 100 Million Americans, it makes sense. It has facts and figures and personal experience, and the key is we can change course, we can choose to change course, and we can actually move our society and our civilization toward a sustainable future simply by addressing the hyperpopulation, overpopulation crisis, and making sure that we don't go that path, that we actually move toward a sustainable future. So thank you, Jo Marie. I'm honored that somebody would come and say, call in like that.
We've got about 7 minutes left on the conference here, and we've got one more caller I'm going to take from, looks like, Washington, Maryland. Last four digits of the number is 5355. 1 second while I mute the caller. Okay, are you there? Maryland? 5355, last four digits of your phone. Are you there?
Doesn't appear that she's there.
Yep. Well, if you need to unmute yourself, it's *7 if you ended up muting yourself. Okay. Well, let's see here. I guess we'll go ahead and move on with the closing statements now. Frosty, I want to thank you for coming on to share your views on this and the research that you've done. And again, as the third or fourth time, I want to remind everyone, definitely do your research on the stuff that is coming out in these webinars. It's so, so important. Whether you believe it, whether you agree with it, it doesn't matter. The idea is you're more educated now by knowing that there's another opinion out there that you may not have been aware of. And that's one of the reasons why we do these things. Whether you agree with everything we say, whether you think that there's UFOs, or you think that there's a NWO, or you think that the WHO is going to put everybody in FEMA coffins, I'm not saying that they're not going to, but the idea is that if you know about it, you can protect yourself, and that's what we're trying to do. So, Frosty, if you can give us your website and where people can get a hold of your book and maybe do a little more research on what it is that you're exposing.
Thank you. And what I want to thank you for is the fact that we are bringing dialogue and discussion. And in my work, I hope to bring discussion and debate. Go to my website, Frosty Wooldridge, WOOLDRIDGE.com, and you can see what I'm trying to do, and also the book, America on the Brink, The Next Added 100 Million Americans. You can get a copy, 1-888-280-7715. It's also in Amazon, and look at the reviews on Amazon. I mean, they're coming in like crazy. Barnes & Noble, you can get it at the Barnes & Noble stores. You can get it at Borders bookstores. You can see the front of the cover is the Statue of Liberty being literally sinking down into New York Harbor, being overloaded by immigrants. And it's more than just a book on immigrants. It's the results of immigrants, because they're simply overloading our ability to sustain our own population, and they're driving us toward adding 100 million people. And again, blindspotdoc.com is one of the great movies out there. Please get it, because you'll see what I know and what I've seen. You'll see it within an hour and a half. That movie will change the way you think about population and resources and oil and our civilization. It is brilliant, and highly recommend it. The books I've said also corroborate what I'm doing. And again, we must bring measured thought and logical thinking to this highly emotional thing called population and certainly immigration. You can even go from all the other aspects. But the one thing you can't escape is that we're facing tremendous challenges here in the early part of the 21st century, and it's up to us, the citizens of this country, to start implementing the solutions. And as I said in my work, the number one solution is to stop mass immigration into this country and move toward a stable population, which we already have, and then we as a nation and as a civilization can maintain a future for all future residents of this country. I hope that there's another Frosty Wooldridge in 2080 that takes out on his bicycle and rides around the world and smiles and laughs along the way and talks to all the people of the world, because they've all so balanced their population so that they're all living within the sustainability and the carrying capacity of their countries, and so that our planet is flying through space and we're having a wonderful experience here, not only humans but all living creatures. So I'm so thankful to be a part of this webcast, and I'm just honored to, and any time I will return for you.
Great. Thanks a lot, Frosty. We've got 1 or 2 minutes left here. Just wanted to remind everybody that the reason these webcasts and this information can be brought to you is by the folks that actually help support what we're doing. Unlike a PBS station, I'm not going to beat it to death, but I'm going to definitely let people know that every subscriber that subscribes to Republic Magazine or donates to our sponsor, Patriot Program, helps us further the education of people on the issues that we're discussing, not only in this webcast but in other webcasts. And I would just encourage those folks that have some money to spare to drop that into our chip in there, so we can get more magazines out to more activists that can't afford those. And also, if you can, just subscribe to the magazine, because that definitely helps us get more information out, as well as keep funding what the things that we're doing here are. So anyway, again, I want to thank you, Frosty, and we'll look forward to hearing from you again soon.
look forward to it. And for everyone out there, be a part of this great republic, because it's the greatest country on the planet, and it has the greatest opportunity for the most people. And I am so honored to be a citizen of the United States of America and be a part of the republic and this great magazine that you all bring out. So thank you, and we'll do it again.
Okay, thanks, everybody, and good night.